wonderful that we have such a full Sendo. You soon need another guest house.
Yes.
For those who may not know, just come out of winter practice period, a 4-week long winter practice period at Upaya, where we explored silent illumination or just sitting, which is a core concept in Soto Zen Buddhism. And I first had in my mind to talk about it, because it's really important to understand for what we are doing here. And it's so different from our normal functioning mind, where we always are goal-oriented. And we bring this to practice too. So we may say, oh, we are not exactly sitting because we want to be enlightened, but a little bit is there often still in. At least it should get a little better after a while. So the concept from Hongzhi, who first made a guidepost of silent illumination, just sitting, and then Dogen really refined the concept, and Dogen Zenji is the founder of our lineage, mines and Joes and for many of you, is radically different from that. He says the very act of Zazen is the enlightenment itself. So I drove here and thought about, I will talk about this. But then I decided differently. So I will, next time, we had two classic texts, just for those who are familiar with this theme, which we studied in the practice period. And it's a very basic text, Fukan Zazengi and Bendoa from Dogen Zenji, from the Shobogenzo, out of the Shobogenzo. Really interesting text to explore. And I have the idea that maybe, you know, the next times I come, I can maybe do a series of two or three. And just, you know, so that we can explore a little bit more these classic texts, which can be very helpful for practice, not just on an understanding level. Also, really, because Dogen often reaches with his poetic way of expression, really, and often with his kind of paradoxical way of expression, but he reaches through this into a deeper level of your subconscious, or how you want to call it, which can help really inform practice. But then lately I read an article which I bought some extracts from, and I thought this is really interesting because she's not a Buddhist, but there are a lot from my side, and I will try to explain it, a lot of Buddhist principle in it. It's from a researcher, of a social psychologist, of social psychology, Brené Brown, and it's called The Power of Vulnerability.
The power.
The Power of Vulnerability. So she did something. She did a research for 6 years, long research, and really wanted to find out how people connect to each other. The various patterns and so forth. And then, because she said, we are really hardwired for connection. Everybody looks for connection. And so I thought this is a great theme for Valentine's Day. And I will explain later why even her results especially are great for Valentine's Day. So what keeps us away from connection, she looked at, and which people do easily connect. And then she started out with, then of course, themes like shame come into play. Because shame you can easily describe as something which we try to hide because if other would see it, they wouldn't love us. That's the basic, easily to understand theme in shame, and it's universal. And as more as you try to hide it and not talk about it, it's more it will influence and push you. So what she found out is kind of two groups, two basic, very simple division of groups. One group who has always struggle to find connection. And I'm talking here not about any pathological, people like us, our normal behavior. So some people really struggle for connection. And they don't feel worthy of connection. And then there's this other group who really, quite the opposite, have strong connections and have this feeling of worthiness in them. And so she tried to find and have a deep sense of belonging and love. So she tried to find out, so what's the difference? Not just the conditions and childhood, no, what's the difference in their behavior? How do they do it? How do they have connections better than others? And what she find out, what was the main difference, is truly just that they believed they were worthy of love and belonging. That's all. They just felt, I'm worthy. So how is this created? How do we feel? That was then her research about it. How, let's see, and she came up with several points here. Just so this kind of wholehearted people who feel worthy and connected and have a deep sense of love and belonging. What she finds out in this big, big research was the main condition for this, what we can call wholehearted people, is they have courage. And courage, as you probably all know, comes from cœur, from the Latin or French, And it's really the heart, the wholehearted. So being just wholehearted and show your heart as it is. So the courage they had was truly the courage to be imperfect. That was the main difference to the other group, she found out. The courage to be imperfect. And because they knew they were imperfect, they had quite a compassion towards themselves. So they were always kind of befriend with themselves. Because they didn't have to make something up, they were just okay with their imperfections. And that led to, so why have people who have the courage to be imperfect better connected than other people? That was her next question. And out of this come, they love more and they are loved more because they are authentic. They are just what they are. And because of this authentic feeling, they would show how vulnerable they are. Because in this, when you are truly authentic, truly in tune with what is going on in you, you open up to really a big vulnerable field in you, because there are constant uncertainties you have to deal with. And then she found out that they believed what made them vulnerable made them also beautiful. And we know this all. We have all this feeling when we really meet an authentic person who shows that to us. Normally we develop immediately an open heart to them because we can connect with them in this feeling. They all said, not that this is a great, comfortable feeling to be vulnerable. No, that's in the core of it where our deepest fears are. But what they also felt is, in the same core is also where all our joy, all our creativity, all our connectedness has its birthplace, where we are truly alive. That's exactly there too. So what they felt is, it's not comfortable, but it's also not really excruciating. It's more, it is necessary. It is truly necessary for having authentic relationships to show how vulnerable you are. And the willingness to do something without any guarantees. You just invest into a relationship. You just start loving. You have no idea of how the outcome will be. But you give yourself wholeheartedly into this process. So this is the description she found out. It's basically the wholehearted approaches. What is now the approach of our so-called normal behavior? What does society do? What is our cultural background of behavior? When we touch into our fear, when we touch into something what is uncomfortable, when we touch into our vulnerability, the first reaction is we numb ourselves. And we brought our society to perfection in this. She's made a great statement, I like it. We are the most in debt, obese, addicted, medicated adult cohort in American history. And that's not just true for America, I don't have to say that extra. That's true for the whole Western world, and probably pretty soon for the whole world. Because we don't have the space to show ourselves, or we think we don't have this, what we do is we numb ourselves with food, with television. It's amazing how much television people watch every day. There's hours on average. So television becomes really our national controller. The whole society is controlled by television. And we just let it happen. And then, you know, we all know our little patterns. You know, even if we may not get immediately drunk when we hit a problem. But still, that's kind of what society tells us. Oh, let's have a beer. Oh, I should have a drink now. Then I will feel better. Oh, chocolate. Oh, we all have our different patterns in it. And all has to do, a lot to do, with the feeling of uncertainty, that we can't bear the feeling of uncertainty. So what do we try to overcome uncertainty? We numb ourselves and we try to perfect ourselves. With all kinds of wild things, like for many women, the attempt to try to stay young, healthy, and beautiful forever. So we have all these cosmetic surgeries. Which is, when you just look from a different perspective, it's the wildest thing. It's really. I mean, they take fat from your butt and put it into your cheeks. They cut yourself off and put some strange plastic into you. I mean, really, let's hope that, you know, from a few hundred years from here, they will look back in history and say, wow. Wow. Is isn't that amazing what they did? But it has many, many forms to be perfect. And we all know in, you know, little details how strong it influences our lives on a very shallow level to just have the perfect table decoration for a party, or to have the white iPhone, the newest one, with the, oh, you only have 4 gigabytes, immediately as a loser. And this kind of, you know, how much time people spend in this realm just to compare where they are, never talking about what is really going on deeply inside of them. What are really the issues who matter? What I really want to talk to you about, or to you, or to a person on the street, or to my colleague. And for some reason, we often don't make it there. No, we talk about the new iPhone, or the old one, or whatever.
The best Verizon. Car.
Okay. Yeah. And then we build groups, again and pro and, well, yeah. So what has this all now to do with practice? Really with meditation, with sitting on the cushion. For some reason, what is also quite a wild thing, you decided this make maybe sense. Why? Why do we do this? Why meditate? Because I would say we feel this wholeheartedness in us. We have still a sense for what is true. And what do I want to really share in this life? What do I want to also share with myself? How do I want to talk to myself? Because most of our conversation times we spend with ourselves. So let's start there. And that's more in our influence. So, how can we do this? We really have to look what is there. So we have to face first, in order to become an authentic person, which through what her research shows, they are befriend with themselves. This starts with they know themselves. If you don't know yourself, you can't really on a deep level befriend with yourself. So we sit down and we really open up to what comes up, whatever it is, we pay attention. Because this part of numbing or being overactive in perfecting everything, that can happen in meditation with yourself too. So you have to find a way and to fine-tune yourself to really pay attention what is present in yourself. And when things come up, like unease, like fear, like anger, any kind of emotion, what the first basic step in meditation is, you turn towards it. You don't turn away. What we have learned in our society is to turn away, to find the next beer or whatever. In meditation, we just stay and look at it. We just go with the sensation. So when you truly feel, tune into fear, and if it's just the fear of uncertainty, this kind of, you know, often kind of unpleasant feeling in the stomach, in your belly, in your, where you really feel kind of weak, you just stay in this sensation. You have the courage, and there is again the link. You have the courage to be wholehearted. And then normally when you stay long enough with it, in this kind of uncertain field, mixed with fear or whatever it is, you often find a soft spot in that. There's a tenderness which comes up if you are brave enough to stay there and not to armor yourself. Because also in our inner mental continuum, we have so many strategies to armor ourselves, to numb ourselves, and going off thinking of Hawaii or wherever you want to be, not being here with what is really present in you. So to become fearless in meditation truly means to know your fear. You are willing to watch and to stay with them. And in this vulnerable field, there's a wonderful tenderness which opens up in you and towards the world. You feel much more connected. You appreciate things. There's a certain, when you continue to practice in this, there's a certain rawness. That's what often is described in sesshins, in 7 days intensive meditations. You are so raw after a while. And in this rawness, something opens up in you. And people are often surprised. It's kind of your senses also open up. And you feel, I don't know, you feel the wind outside. You step out the zendo differently. You really can touch the wetness of water or the blueness of an iris. You suddenly see a flower differently. And this all has to do with not turning away, to be willing to stay in this uncertainty. Because this is also from a Buddhist perspective, where the Eightfold Path starts with. Right view. One ingredient of the right view is being aware of impermanence. Being aware of impermanence. There she is, another wholehearted person. Like the photo shows so beautifully. Yeah. So this is before we really come into where I started with what I want to talk about the next times, about this just sitting. Just being in the flow of sitting, broad, widened perspective, without focusing on an object anymore. Has to start with focusing on what is really there, right now, in this moment, each time when you sit down. So you really have the determination to see to whatever comes up, to really want to know yourself. And then you just watch your tendency, your internal formations, how you react in this non-reactive way of still sitting. That's why posture is so important. We have a strong emphasis on posture. You really sit upright. You really hold your outer posture. And then internally, you just open up to whatever comes. And this, as I said, really let you feel connected and authentic. And one example I would like to give at the end to make this really clear that we all have our, that we really can work with it, is for some of you know, I went last summer to Auschwitz with a whole group of bearing witness with Bernie Glassman, Roshi. And I wanted to do this for a long, long time. For some reason, it never happened, but then it happened. And it happened because now a friend of mine, Natalie Goldberg, she's Jewish, and we started our first hike together in a group, and then we were separated. And we sat down because it was a long hike, and she started the conversation with, "I'm sorry, I have to tell you something. I hate Germans." And from this point, an amazing, now looking back after some years, an amazing relationship and story developed through this. Because this was just what I meant with being authentic and wholehearted. It's not about political correctness, and it could have ended there, where I, you know, as a German would say, "Yes, you are absolutely right, but I can't help it, so I'm born 10 years after the war, so that could be the end of it. But for some reason, the two of us opened up in this way, because she was authentic, I could be authentic. And I could tell her all about my childhood and my youth in Germany, my shame, the guilt was all around there. This, what I couldn't understand as a child, what was going on. Later I understood more. I had to go through this shock. Never wanted to be German. Always kind of hiding to be German. And so we were suddenly in a field where we could listen to our stories. And this is only possible when you have the courage to say what is on your heart. And then we both went together to Auschwitz. And this is another long story. But I would say it was for both of us quite transforming. For me, really, really life-transforming in ways which I still can't really understand. But for the first time, I was really given the opportunity to work through all this guilt and shame in a really healing manner, because there was this kind of connection based, for the most people, not for all, but for many, on meditation. Just sitting there in this place, everything drops away. You are not so much anymore in discussions about, and it's you are in this total rawness. It's the, for me, definitely the place where I felt the rawest in my whole life. And in a very strange way, and I'm careful to say it, but that was also one of the most connected times in my life with this group of people there. We were 150 people for 5 or 6 days together. Because in this facing this unbelievable atrocities, there's something where you really come together just as raw human beings. And that is a very healing moment. And it doesn't have to be so dramatic as the example I just gave. That was just because in my history somehow written. But this can be in our daily lives. And we just be open and raw to another person and say, hey, that's me. I'm stumble along in this life. So do you. Let's stumble together.